old, as you can perhaps tell. I have already completed my school certificate in English, thanks to a Miss Edie Campbell from Melrose. She must have been an excellent teacher. I hate to correct you, but you probably mean she's done a grand job, don't you? Oh, for goodness sake, Pasha, don't start teasing her already, snapped Sonia. Ah, here come your charges, Miss Freely. My youngest brother and sister, Dima and Lisa. They arrived, panting and grinning. A solid fair-haired boy and a taller, skinny girl with plaits. Miss Freely, do come this way, Sonia said. My father is looking forward to meeting you. Dima put his hand in mine. In the study, Mr. Korbeliff, a tall, slight man with a grey streaked beard, came forward to greet me. Welcome, welcome. My dear Miss Freely, sit down with us, drink some tea. You must be tired. I took a seat. As the room was painted dark green, full of smoke and unlit, I could barely see who was opposite me. At last I made out two ancient ladies, the old governess, Mademoiselle, and Mr. Korbeliff's aunt, Anna Vladimirovna, behind a large brass samovar, bobbing their heads and smiling at me. I bobbed and smiled back, and they waggled their heads all the more energetically. Pasha came to my rescue, murmuring at me to stop first. Otherwise, you could be nodding at each other for days. Is that why the last governess left?
Yes, a very sad business. In the end, her head fell off.
Is she ill? The aunt said loudly to Mr. Korbeliff in French. She's making barbaric noises. No, no, aunt. Soyez tranquille. He leant across to talk to me. He was in his late 50s, I supposed, but seemed younger, with the same dark brown eyes as Pasha. He pulled Dima to him and stroked his cheek. They are good children, though perhaps a little wild, eh, you monkeys? You see, Miss Freely, their poor mother is ill, and I'm very often away on business. They've not had an easy childhood. My mother has neurasthenia, Sonia said. She has to stay in bed most days, although now and again she manages a meal downstairs. If there's anything you need, my father is the one to approach. Now, let me show you to your room. Governesses are famously long-lived. When I met her in 1914, the Korbeliff's retired governess, Mademoiselle, was in her mid-80s, timid and furry as a vole, and still running errands for the whole family. As I write this, I am not far from 80 myself. A whole lifetime has passed since I went to Russia. My daughter Sophie has grown up sons of her own. My husband, Paul, died 6 months ago, and since then I have the strange sensation that the present, my creaky old body in the little terraced house in Hackney which we bought together, is no longer my home. For several months, Sophie has been trying to persuade me to clear the attic of a lifetime of accumulated papers, and I have been feebly resisting. She is quite right that it must be done, of course. I know that. I'm merely taking a moment to gird up my loins before I dredge Slavkin's story up from its decades of silence. Last week, Sophie, running out of patience, hauled several boxes down and left them by my chair. Have a look through, Mama, and on Saturday I can throw out what you don't want to keep. All week I rehearse how I'm going to open the conversation with Sophie. Paul wanted us to tell her everything years ago, but I persuaded him it would be too confusing, too painful. And now he's gone. It is frankly a worse moment than ever to begin, but I have no choice. I find myself writing an account for her instead, using the papers as my starting point. This way, I think, will be more truthful. We were at the Korbeliff's country estate, Mikhailovka, when the war began. I remember so vividly where we were sitting, looking down to the bend in the stream where the cattle were drinking. Mr. Korbeliff stepped out onto the veranda, rubbing his forehead. Dears, it has happened. Russia has declared war on Germany. The prospect of war had been hanging over us, and we felt a sort of ghastly relief when it was finally announced. I thought about, but dismissed the idea of going home. I was enjoying myself, and like everyone, I was convinced that it would be a short war. Nikita Slavkin sat a little apart from Pasha's other friends, arms wrapped around his long, knobbly legs, pale and awkward. He had very short, almost colourless hair that revealed a bumpy scalp, slightly protuberant pale blue eyes. When the conversation turned to women's rights, Pasha drew him in. "Nikita here has some ideas, don't you, Nikita? He's inventing all sorts of contraptions that will change women's lives, and all our lives. Come over here, tell us." Nikita stood upright. He was absurdly tall and skinny, and blushed even under his hair. When he spoke, his voice was strangely deep and a little too loud. He looked embarrassed by that too. "Well, one of my inventions is a lightweight chastity belt woven out of steel thread." The room erupted into protest. Everyone was disgusted, either on liberal, conservative or squeamish grounds. Mr. Korbeliev's aunt, Anna Vladimirovna, wanted him thrown out of the house. Pasha laughed so much he fell off the divan. Slavkin stood there, his large hands hanging by his sides, vulnerable. "Of course I have not perfected the material yet." A neighbour of the Korbeliefs, Marina Gertler, who was studying medicine, looked as though she might punch him. "Don't you see? Modern women need freedom," she hissed. His full, pale lips trembled a little. "I do see, yes," he muttered. "That's my aim." Slavkin had just moved into the small bedroom next to mine, which Mr. Korbeliev had offered him in exchange for a few hours' work a week on his catalogue. At 22, the same age as me, he was 4 years older than Pasha and seemed a decade wiser. A scholarship student from Siberia, studying physics and engineering at Moscow University, he was already known to many of the artists and poets in the avant-garde for his inventions, which he claimed would drive forward the steamer of modernity. But he was not, at first, a popular addition to Gagarinsky Lane. Sonia made it clear that she found Slavkin uncouth, while Anna Vladimirovna claimed his village voice gave her headaches. The loyal Pasha, however, wouldn't hear a word said against his friend. He teased Sonia and Anna Vladimirovna about their attitude, which he claimed was a medical condition, snobbosis. The two young men were inseparable. It was Pasha who gave Nikita the nickname Camel. "Legs and eyelashes," he explained. Although he also described Nikita as a mythical creature. "Half Moses and half the camel he rode on, with a heart made entirely of little fluffy puppies." As I read my letters, I strain to catch again a whiff of the stuffy, overheated air of Mr. Korbeliev's dark green study, lit by the rosy glow of the large fringed brass lamps. His ethnographic collection spread over every surface, and the high-backed red divan crammed with shining, excitable faces shouting each other down. Slavkin showing us his new inventions one after the other, billows of smoke hovering in the light, shrouding Mr. Korbeliev's expression, and Mamselle, the old governess, smiling timidly on the edge of things. Music cranked out of the gramophone, and me at the samovar, dark-haired, pale, with serious grey eyes, still a little shy, frowning in concentration as I add the hot water. Those three pre-revolutionary years were my university. At home, for all my minor rebellions, I had never dreamt of challenging my parents' articles of faith. Any note of discord roused my father to spittle-laden fury. In Moscow, I discovered a household where the most absurd and opposing views could be voiced, disagreed with, argued over, or renounced without any tempers lost or touchy chapel gods invoked.
da wurde es auch schon Winter. Gerda lief und lief so lang, bis sie nicht mehr konnte. Schließlich musste sie sich ausruhen und setzte sich in den Schnee. Eine große Krähe angeflogen und ließ sich bei ihr nieder. Die Krähe saß lange ruhig da, betrachtete Gerda und wackelte langsam mit dem Kopf. Dann sagte sie:
Kra, kra, guten Tag, guten Tag.
Besser konnte sie es nicht herausbringen, aber sie meinte es gut mit Gerda und fragte, warum sie so allein mitten im Winter in die weite Welt hinausginge. Gerda erzählte der Krähe die ganze Geschichte und fragte, ob sie Kai gesehen habe. Die Krähe nickte bedächtig und krächzte.
»Das könnte sein! Das könnte sein!«
»Wirklich?« rief Gerda und hätte die Krähe fast mit einem Kuss erdrückt.
»Sei vernünftig! Vernünftig!« sagte die Krähe. »Ich glaube, ich weiß. Kra! Ich glaube, es kann sein. Kra! Der kleine Kai. Kra! Aber nun hat er dich sicher wegen der Prinzessin vergessen.«
»Wohnt er bei einer Prinzessin?« fragte Gerda.
»Ja, höre«,
sprach die Krähe. Und dann erzählte sie, was sie wusste. Wie die Prinzessin einen wirklich klugen Prinzen suchte und ihn in einem Jungen fand, der aufrecht und gerade heraus in das Schloss stolzierte. Gerda schöpfte wieder neue Hoffnung, und die Krähe führte sie ins Schloss zur Prinzessin und ihrem Prinzen, vorbei an den Wachen. Aber ach, es war nicht Kai. Die Krähe hatte sich geirrt. Weinend erzählte Gerda ihre Geschichte. Wie sie ihr nur helfen könnten, fragten die Prinzessin und ihr Prinz. Gerda bat um einen kleinen Wagen mit einem Pferd davor und um ein paar kleine Stiefel, dann wolle sie wieder in die weite Welt hinausfahren und Kai suchen. Am nächsten Morgen stand eine goldene Kutsche vor dem Tor. Die Krähe begleitete sie das erste Stück, sie saß ihr zur Seite, denn sie konnte nicht vertragen, rückwärts zu fahren. Inwendig war die Kutsche mit Zuckerbrezeln gepolstert und im Sitz waren Früchte und Pfeffernüsse. Schließlich sagte auch die Krähe Lebewohl, und das war für Gerda der schwerste Abschied. Wie gut sind doch die Menschen und Tiere, dachte Gerda, und der Gedanke machte ihr wieder Mut. Die Krähe flog auf einen Baum und schlug mit ihren schwarzen Flügeln, solange sie den Wagen, der wie der helle Sonnenschein glänzte, noch sehen konnte.
Is this thing on? Can you hear me now? Wat zouden die influencers van de Social House deze week geleerd hebben? Niet veel waarschijnlijk, maar kunnen die niet voor altijd in dat kot blijven zitten? Met een never-ending loop van Melt Banana of Napalm Dead. Mooi opgelost. Oké, rant mode off. Een goede avond en welkom bij Signa Ruis. Tijd voor de eerste band van de avond en het is tijd om je over te geven aan de weirde wereld van het trio Wombo uit Louisville, Kentucky. Gelukkig maken ze geen belegen country zoals je zou verwachten, maar schots en scheve indie pop. Dit is Dreamsicle van Wombo.
I'm
audiofiles, ja, dat zijn wij ook een beetje. En zeker als we een nummer als dit horen. In de zomer van 2020 trok Jason Nicol zich terug met een 8-track recorder. CDG, oftewel de Conditioner Disco Group, die was geboren. Uiteindelijk stonden op die 8-track 5 korte nummers die nu uit zijn. Het plaatje kreeg als titel Unconditional mee en bespeuren we daar een verband met de groepsnaam. Tijd voor Smirk. Public Eye maakte vorig jaar een plaatje waar we wel eens wat uit gedraaid hebben. En als frontman Nick Vicario daar een soloplaat maakt als Smirk, dan luisteren wij. En jij, oftewel Do You?
We'll be right back.
Lekker rammen met de derde EP van PR Shake uit LA. Het plaatje met vier nummers kreeg de naam Wax en is vorige maand uitgekomen op Avamet Records. Het zo net gespeelde Televised Warfare is een schoolvoorbeeld van een ouderwetse punk doordrenkt met een scheut psychedelische hash die de massa in quarantaine wat afleiding en energie moet geven. En dat doet ook deze volgende, de nieuwe van de Britse Working Man's Club. Een eerste wapenfeit na hun debuut van vorig jaar. De drumcomputer werd opzij gezet en vervangen door een echte drummer, wat ons betreft al een goede zet. Dit is X van Working Man's Club. Deze stond al even in de queue, hate it or love it, maar uiteindelijk hebben de toeters en catchy manische vocalen ons overhaald. Dit was de oproep tot antiracisme van het Schotse zestal Kapoet. Hun nieuwe single Movement Now, die komt uit op een nieuwe 7-inch en die staat voor volgende maand gepland via Upset the Rhythm. De Ierse Sinéad O'Brien is langzaamaan aan het toewerken naar een eerste langspeler. Vorig jaar waren er een paar singles en een puiken-EP en sinds kort heeft ze onderdak gevonden bij het fijne Chess Club Records. Om dat te vieren is er nu een nieuw nummer. Dit is het behoorlijk volwassen klinkende Kid Stuff.
I'm in my finest hour. Recently emerged from increasingly submerged. Head full of junk and nothing. Where junk is not worth its weight in time or conversation. So I do not. Yeah, kid stuff. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. Picture a portrait of yourself and that is what you are. Cropped. Master the edit. The length and get the whole head in. Not only a mouth talking, not again. We are not ready for that yet. Again, spent time on it, meditating around the sun, not to leave until I know it, that which I ignore. Choose shoes only for reinforcement, unnecessary accessories for the portrait, but the beautiful booming pony sound, the spirit of a horse following me out, up and down start pacing slates. Riding over scattered shadows reminds me that I am still on the run. That which is not lost is not gone. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. Kid stuff. Which waiting breaks for me from me. Dusty evening, late night reverie. Now waiting in the light of day at my garden gate. Lost is not gone. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. We are the public eye and mouth and hand, watching over landscape from which we've been extracted. Smoked out of the streets, let in. We watch nothing go around and around in freedom. We are on a dangerous wind of changing pace. Shadow walking to the future. Watching clocks, kettles. Sunset after sunset. First sign of change. Washing lines heavy with cargo. I do not need hanging from my lines. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. Conversations sound like interviews from cool blue screens. An impression of a soul you once knew through filter and distorted interview. And you talk of kid stuff and all of that. Someone quiet and important told me to turn my mind toward that which I ignore. To spend time on it. To meditate and ring around the sun. I ignore that which I ignore. Someone quiet said that. Someone that I forgot. Someone I ignore. That which I ignore. Which waiting breaks belief in me. Dusky evening, late night reverie. Now waiting in the light of day. At my garden gaping with the second wave coming. Reminds me that I am still on the run. That which is not lost is not gone. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. Kid stuff. Someone quiet and important told me to spend time on it. To meditate a ring around the sun. Not to leave until I know it. That which I ignore. That which I ignore. Someone quiet. had said that. Someone that I forgot. Someone young. Someone I ignore. Kid stuff. And all of that.
New Jersey Turnpike. Riding on a wet night. Need the refinery loan. Out where the grey black rivers flow. License registration. I ain't got none. But I got a clear conscience about the things that I've done. Mr. State Trooper, please don't stop me. Please don't stop me. Please don't stop me. Maybe you got a kid. My baby, the radio shuffle.
Dit was de verslavend mooie cover State Trooper van het Britse King Hannah. De band rond Hannah Merrick was zo verliefd op het origineel van Bruce Springsteen uit zijn meesterwerk Nebraska dat ze live in een repetitiehoek deze versie opnamen. Het nummer staat trouwens ook in de A-lijst van Scorpio. Je kan het dus de komende maand hier wel vaker horen passeren. Als je door die State Trooper van King Hannah niet wordt afgevoerd in de boevenkar, dan kun je in de taxi van de boefjes van Pardoner springen. Hun plaat Came Down Different komt eraan en dit is de derde single eruit, Bunny's Taxi van Pardoner. Zero, een nieuw nummer van het uit Brighton afkomstige Projector. De Britse trio bouwt rustig verder aan hun weg met enkele singles en een EP, allemaal te vinden bij het Londense Roadkill Records. Tijd voor nog eens een klassieker. Repetition van 90s band Unwound verscheen op deze dag nauwkeurig 25 jaar geleden bij Kill Rock Stars. De plaat hoort bij het beste van hun discografie en klinkt ook een kwart eeuw na datum nog fris en opwindend. Binnen 2 weken is er een heruitgave op vinyl door de Number Group. En dat geldt ook voor opvolger Challenge for a Civilized Society uit 1998. Maar dit komt uit de jubileumplaat Repetition, de klassieke Corpse Pose van Unwound.
We'll be right back.
Blue Jeans van Anorak Patch. Een ultra jonge band uit Colchester. Drummer Luca Ryland is amper 14 en zijn kompanen niet veel ouder. Het is al de tweede single die ze mochten uitbrengen bij Nice Swan Records. En die hebben dit jaar al fijne plaatjes uitgebracht van Courting en vooral Sprints. En we houden ze dus vanaf nu nog meer in het oog. Vrijdag release dag. Vandaag staat onder meer de nieuwe plaat van Arabrot bij de Nieuwe Oogst. Norwegian Gothic is een flinke bevalling geworden. Een 16 tracks tellende dubbel LP. Hier is de opener met muzikantenkoppel Ketel Nernes en Karin Parken, beide op zang. Dit is Carnival of Love van Arabrot.
Yeah.